Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The long primary season ends tomorrow for the Democrats, but how the Clinton-Obama battle ends is still a mystery. Saturday, the party's Rules and Bylaws Committee ruled to seat the full Michigan and Florida delegations, but with each delegate only getting half a vote. Clinton supporters in the rowdy crowd signaled they're ready to fight all the way to the convention floor. Top Clinton advisor and committee member Harold Ickes took the panel to task.
Hijacking four delegates, notwithstanding the flawed aspect of this, is not a good way to start down the path of party unity.
This hour On Point, a big ruling in the Democrats' endgame. You can join the conversation. Did the committee make history on Saturday? Was it the history you wanted? Was it the right decision on Florida and Michigan? We will hear from a Rules Committee co-chairman and members from the Clinton and Obama camps today. We begin in Washington with a closer look at Saturday's showdown and what's happened since. Wall Street Journal reporter June Kronholz was in Washington for the meeting and was following the Puerto Rico vote yesterday. She joins us now. June, thanks very much for being here.
I'm happy to be here, Tom.
So it's hard to know where to begin here. Let's just go to the numbers first. In terms of delegates, after the new division on Saturday, after Puerto Rico yesterday, where does this thing stand?
Where does it stand? Closer to finishing, but not there yet. How's that?
Well, I guess that's pretty good. On delegate numbers, is there a new finish line here? What is the number now?
Yeah, it's 21-18 now. This is a moving target, isn't it?
Right. And Hillary Clinton picked up a lot in Puerto Rico with her very big win there.
Yes.
But Barack Obama still picking up superdelegates, which is getting him closer. How close is he at this point? Do we know, June?
Frankly, Tom, I didn't do that count this morning. She also benefited, of course, from Saturday's decision by the Rules Committee. She narrowed the gap. But I don't think anybody believes that she narrowed it enough to make a significant difference. He still remains so far ahead. The superdelegates will make the decision, and they certainly seem to be leaning toward him at this point.
June, help us interpret what's going on here. We've got all kinds of statements, lots of emotion on Saturday. Then Hillary Clinton in Puerto Rico seeming, and we'll listen here to a little clip of her, seeming to tell the crowd there that she's the nominee.
We are winning the popular vote. Now there can be no doubt. The people have spoken, and you have chosen your candidate. And it's important where we have won. We are winning these votes in swing states and among the very swing voters that Democrats must win to take back the White House.
So she sounds like, well, she's high in the saddle. Barack Obama conceded Puerto Rico, but from South Dakota, where he's hoping to bring in a win, he praised the senator as he looked to the general election as though he's the man.
First of all, Senator Clinton is an outstanding public servant. She has worked tirelessly in this campaign. She has been a great senator for the state of New York, and she is going to be a great asset when we go into November to make sure that we defeat the Republicans. That I can promise you.
All right, June, how do you figure this thing goes from here? What actually settles this?
Well, two obvious things are going on here. He's looking ahead toward November. He's trying to be conciliatory to the Clinton folks and reaching out to them, and that's why he's talking as he did in South Dakota. She's still got her eye on the nomination, and she's trying to argue that the popular vote is what matters. Well, of course, it doesn't. What matters is the delegate count, and his popular vote is lower because, in fact, he's won most of his victories in caucus states where there is much lower turnout, of course. She's hoping to use this popular vote argument before superdelegates to get them to see her as the most electable and to swing their votes to her. Now, will that happen? I can't tell you that. I wouldn't think so, but that's certainly her argument going into approaching superdelegates.
June, you were there in Washington at the hotel on Saturday when the Rules Committee sat down. Great big crowd, very boisterous crowd, and more outside until the rain came.
Yes.
They seem to get out of there, you know, intact, but a lot of emotion as it went along. What do you think of the dynamic that was in that hall as the Rules Committee made its decision? Did they come as close as they could to satisfying everybody? Was that impossible?
I'm sure it was impossible. It was an ugly scene at moments. I mean, there was an awful lot of heckling and jeering and quite a bit of nastiness. Emotions are high. This is high stakes. We're down to the wire here, and people are very passionate about these two candidates. I wasn't surprised. It was very disruptive, but it wasn't surprising. Now, Obama's challenge is going to have to be getting these folks reconciled to his side. The party's challenge is the same thing. The party is terrified of going into November with a divided electorate, and the two of them will have to be working very hard over this summer to get Clinton supporters back on board.
Let's listen for another minute to committee member Harold Ickes. Of course, he's a senior Clinton advisor and very feisty in Saturday's meeting, indicating the fight may not be over.
There's been a lot of rhetoric during this meeting about democracy and on and on and on. I am stunned that we have the gall and the chutzpah to substitute our judgment for 600,000 voters. Finally, one final word. Mrs. Clinton has instructed me to reserve her rights to take this to the Credentials Committee.
June, hot language there, you know, gall and chutzpah, but interpret that last line for us.
Sure,
Mrs. Clinton has instructed him to reserve her right to take it to the Credentials Committee. What exactly would that mean?
This is their ultimate threat, and this is like throwing the nuclear bomb. The Credentials Committee begins meeting at the end of June to look at everybody's credentials and to verify everybody's right to go to this convention. My understanding is that to take a minority report from the Credentials Committee to the floor of the convention and therefore challenge the seating of delegates takes about a 25% vote of the Credentials Committee. So that's about 45 votes out of 180 on the Credentials Committee. Mm. Now, I concede the last big fight was 1972, and it was over the California delegation, mm-hmm. which is a huge delegation. I can imagine you could justify a credentials fight over such a huge number of delegates. It's hard to see it happening over a handful of Michigan seats, unless you really had no interest in the future of the party. Of course, the party is terrified of this. It would be fought on national television. Of course, national television is thrilled at the prospect, but I frankly don't see it happening. Not that, of course, I have anything to say about it.
You've written that Senator Clinton's last hopes of an upset appear to be dashed, but you also write that some advisors say she may be hoping for some other controversy to come up on the Obama side of the ledger here to give him so much trouble that superdelegates sure. would turn her way. Any sign of that? And how long can she wait for that possibility?
Well, the last one standing, of course, is the one who's going to get the nomination. And if something unimaginable, I mean, we can't possibly think what it would be. But also, we never a month ago would have thought of the Jeremiah Wright controversy and the damage it's done to Obama. Her last hope is that something so unimaginable happens that he loses his support, he's forced out of the race, or something like that. As long as she's still a declared candidate, of course, she has the strongest claim to the nomination.
And how long do you think, what are you hearing, she may hang on for that possibility of that hope arising, materializing?
Conflicting reports, and I'm sure the campaign isn't going to say anything definitive for a while yet. They're certainly not going to tell us.
June Kronholz with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for being with us, June. Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
In a few minutes, we'll hear from two committee members backing Clinton and Obama. Right now, joining me in the studio is co-chair of the DNC's Rules and Bylaws Committee, James Roosevelt. James Roosevelt, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be with you.
So, you got out of that hall with your skin still on. A lot of emotion there, though. Are you satisfied with where the committee finally came down?
There were very long discussions, comprehensive presentations by both challengers from Florida and Michigan, both state parties, both campaigns. Very eloquent presentations, I might say, including by two United States senators and two members of Congress. I believe that we had a full, fair, and open process that came to the best and fairest solution that we could come to. And as usual, when you're dealing with an imperfect set of facts, it's probably an imperfect solution.
When Harold Ickes talks about gall, chutzpah, and a hijacking here, how do you take that? Is that an insult to the process? Does the committee deserve that?
The position of the Clinton campaign and of many of my friends who are strong Clinton supporters is that 100% of the delegates should have been seated from Michigan, and recognizing the outcome of the Michigan primary exactly as it was. And that, of course, was a primary where half the active candidates were not on the ballot.
Including Obama.
Including Senator Obama. Had we done that, it would have been a difference of six additional delegates for Senator Clinton. So that's when June, a few minutes ago, referred to the small number of delegates at stake in a credentials challenge here. That would have resulted in six additional delegates. It's possible because some of the there also would have – that's pledged delegates. There would have been the category for uncommitted also recognized. I have heard Clinton supporters say that five of those were for Senator Clinton as well, even though she was on the ballot. Mm. So let's give the benefit of the doubt. We come to 11. That's what would have been and still is at stake.
There was Democratic leadership hope of closing the door on this whole race this weekend. We'll come back and ask if that's happened and hear from members in both camps, Clinton and Obama. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Democrats' big weekend showdown over Florida and Michigan. You can hear the chants right there Saturday in Washington. And looking at the Clinton-Obama endgame, here's one unhappy protester as things wrapped up.
Democrats are throwing the election away. For what?
Throwing the election away for what, she asks. I'm joined in the studio today by James Roosevelt. He's co-chair of the DNC's Rules and Bylaws Committee and a superdelegate himself. He's been neutral throughout the Democratic primary. We've got a couple of other committee members with us as well right now. Joining me from Columbia, South Carolina, is Carol Fowler, a member of the DNC Rules and Bylaws Committee, a superdelegate, chairwoman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. She supports Barack Obama. Carol Fowler, thank you.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you. And with us from Brewster, Massachusetts, is Elaine Kmark, member of the DNC Rules and Bylaws Committee, also a superdelegate. She backs Hillary Clinton. Elaine Kmark, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Elaine, first to you. You're a declared partisan in this race. So how do you feel about the outcome of Saturday's big meeting?
Well, I'm somewhat disappointed. I definitely would have preferred that Hillary Clinton be able to pick up the nine delegates that I think the interpretation of the rules would have accorded her. But, you know, sometimes in politics, as in other things in life, you have to make a compromise, which really doesn't make anybody very happy. And the committee felt that the compromise that the Michigan Party had come up with was the way to go. So Hillary did end up with more delegates than uncommitted in Michigan, although not as many as some of us thought she should have gotten. So, you know, it's one of those things. There were simply not the votes there to get her full delegate complement, but at least she came out with a net plus.
Carol Fowler, did Saturday, you're in the Obama camp, did Saturday feel like a win to you as an Obama supporter? Did it feel like a win on the way to unity or a win on the way to a fight, further fight?
Well, I certainly hope it's put us on the path to unity. I don't think either side felt like they got a big win out of this, but I hope that neither side felt that it was a loss. It clearly was a compromise. There was no perfect solution, and I believe that the committee did the best that anyone thought they could do.
Jim Roosevelt, last fall, when these decisions were first made, that Michigan and Florida would have to pay a price for moving their primaries up. Hillary Clinton said, it's clear this election, talking about Michigan, it's clear this election they're having is not going to count for anything. Of course, you've seen in recent weeks and months that her camp has fought very hard for these to count. Have you felt, as co-chair of this committee, that the Clinton camp was trying to move the goalposts here, or were you sympathetic to her count every vote call?
Well, first of all, I was very sympathetic to having the voters of Michigan and Florida represented. That's one of the principles that we went in with to this meeting, my co-chair, former Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman, and I. Secondly, I felt that we needed to be fair to the supporters of both candidates. And thirdly, I felt that we needed to be fair to the 48 states and the District of Columbia that followed the rules. A lot of them wanted to go early, too. And they, because they saw that we meant it about the rules with Michigan and Florida, they didn't do that.
But the rules said, or your earlier ruling was, their votes would not count. So did you move the goalposts?
Well, indeed. Harold Ickes tried to explain earlier in the meeting on Saturday why he voted to have no delegates from Michigan and Florida last August, and now has obviously changed his position. And what he said is the situation has changed, so I'm reacting to different facts now. And indeed, there's some basic truth to that. The situation is different. Michigan and Florida state Democratic parties had the responsibility when their legislatures and their governors broke the law with the early primaries, they had the responsibility to come up with an alternative process. They didn't do that. That's why it fell to the Rules and Bylaws Committee of the DNC to come up with a fair solution that represented the voters as closely as we could.
Carol Fowler, what about from your vantage? As an Obama supporter, did you feel that the Clinton push to count every vote was, you know, the spirit of American democracy, political expediency necessary to keep Florida and Michigan voters in for the general election, or moving the goalposts?
Well, I think the Clinton campaign and did what they what a campaign has to do. I mean, they're scrapping it at this point for every vote, and I don't blame them a bit for that. I do think that we had to do all we could do not to change the rules in the middle of the game, because after all the states have voted using our same set of rules. It's the same for every state. So I hope that Democrats all over the country who are concerned that maybe every vote was not counted will focus on this in 4 years while states are setting their calendar and insist that their political leaders follow the rules. I mean, that's what happened in Florida and Michigan. Political leaders did not follow the rules, and the voters had to pay the price. And we were just trying to make that a little better than it was in the beginning before we went in there.
Elaine K. Mark, I want to ask you about where your candidate stands now. Here's Hillary Clinton again in Puerto Rico yesterday with a big win there, more than 2-1 over Barack Obama, sounding like she's the one who should, maybe will, carry the flag.
Which candidate best represents the will of the people who voted in this historic primary? Which candidate is best able to lead us to victory in November? And which candidate is best able to lead our nation as our president in the face of unprecedented challenges at home and abroad?
Elaine K. Mark, Rules Committee member, how long can Senator Clinton keep up that kind of rhetoric on the stump without really damaging Barack Obama, if indeed he's going to be the nominee?
It sort of depends on what the rhetoric consists of. I think she...
Well, it says she represents the will of the people, that she's best able to lead.
She's making a case for her own candidacy. She isn't really tearing him down or using some very negative campaigning. And if you look at her statements in the last 3 weeks, she's been continuing to forcefully make the case that she is a very strong general election candidate, and there's some significant evidence to that. But she's also been careful not to go on the attack against Barack Obama. It's a difficult thing to do, to continue your candidacy in this kind of a situation, but I think she's doing a very good job at making the case for her but not making the case against him.
Carol Fowler, do you agree when Senator Clinton says she best represents the will of the people, she's best able to lead in November, she's best able to face the challenges at home and abroad? Is that fair at this point in the process? Is she portraying Barack Obama as second best?
Well, that's what candidates do. They portray their opponents as second best or third best or fourth best. I think she is doing the best job she can to make her case, but I think it's clear from the results of all these primaries and caucuses that Barack Obama has done a better job of making his case, and I think it's clear that he's going to be the nominee.
Let's hear from our listeners in Aiken, South Carolina, down your way, Ms. Fowler. Tim is calling. Hi, Tim, you're on the air.
How you doing, Tom? Just a quick comment and a question. Under Terry McAuliffe, a Clinton supporter, the rules in the 2004 primary were to take half the delegates when states moved their primaries, if I'm correct. This committee, with Harold Ickes, a Clinton supporter, as a part of it, voted to strip all of the delegates when the precedent was just to take half. It's funny to me that Ickes now has, to use his words, gall and chutzpah to act indignant. If he and this committee had not taken all of the delegates in the first place, we wouldn't be in this situation. Why is there not more focus on what the committee caused in the first place?
Let's go to the co-chair, James Roosevelt. Mr. Roosevelt.
Well, it's a very good question. And the fact is that what we were dealing with was a new approach this time, where we included two additional states as early states. We're all used to Iowa and New Hampshire going first. But after a long series of hearings and open meetings, we decided to add South Carolina, your home state, and Nevada in order to represent other regions of the country, other economic circumstances, other ethnic groups. What Michigan and Florida were trying to do was to step on the influence of those other early states. So it was a situation where there had to be decisive action. And the rules, while they had, just like the Republican rules do, and Republicans have enforced a 50% automatic penalty against five states, including Michigan and Florida.
And South Carolina.
You're right, Carol. Our rules have that automatic penalty, but when there's an egregious set of facts, the rules provide that the committee has the discretion to increase the loss of delegates to 100%. To send that message, the committee overwhelmingly felt that that was the right action to take last summer, knowing what we knew then. No one knew then that we'd have two such strong candidates who would totally reverse the history of the last half century, where things were decided by the first 10 or 12 primaries and caucuses, where we'd go down to the final primaries tomorrow in South Dakota and Montana without this nomination being decided. And I think that's because there are two such strong candidates.
Sent the message last summer. Yes, Elaine, please.
Yeah, let me just add to that. It's hard to remember now, but last August when our committee made this decision, the entire political world and the press world, Tom, breathed a huge sigh of relief because we were the last ones that stood between an orderly process and utter chaos. And what our decision did was it stopped about 20 states that at that point were thinking about in their legislatures moving their primaries way into January.
Right.
And we were looking at a process that would have the New Hampshire primary at Thanksgiving. So we had to take really strong action. And when we did, everyone in the political world breathed a sigh of relief and said, okay, now we know what the calendar is. We can proceed to have an orderly process.
So you built a firewall to keep everybody from tumbling into January, but you chopped half of it down on Saturday. Elaine, Kmark, in the Clinton camp, are you satisfied with the committee's vote? Clearly Harold Ickes didn't sound satisfied. Where are you?
The Clinton people on the committee split. People like Don Fowler, a former party chairman, myself, and a couple other people voted for the Michigan Compromise, kind of holding our noses, frankly, because it wasn't a reflection of the rules, frankly. But it was, as many things are in politics, it was a compromise, and we felt that it would help the Michigan Party pull itself together for the general election. And then the other, so we sort of split, the Clinton group split in half.
And where did you come down?
I came down in favor of the Michigan Compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, it was a worry about the general election and making sure that the Michigan Democratic Party could pull itself together for the fall election. There were still plenty of votes there to bring this onto the Credentials Committee, and I think that that's a decision now that the campaign and Senator Clinton herself have to really think about, which is, are they going to take this forward? I just was looking at all the national newspapers this morning, and you know, depending on what paper you pick up, you get completely different points of view.
Yes.
So I don't think this issue is settled yet. There were not the votes on the committee to get what Senator Clinton wanted and what all of us, our first choice. There were not the votes for our first choice. So we, some of us went with this compromise in order to come out of there with something that the Michigan Democrats at least had requested.
Elaine, may I just ask you then, does the fact that you voted for the Michigan Compromise mean that you think it's time for Hillary Clinton to concede, or do you think she should hang in?
No, I think she should hang in there. I think she has to go through the primaries tomorrow. I think there are a lot of superdelegates still to make their decisions, and that she needs to then take stock once. I think there's going to be a lot of superdelegates making announcements in the next week. And I think she should stay in there and assess her options going forward. Bringing a convention fight is quite difficult. It requires a lot of passion among your supporters, which she has, but it also has big downsides for the candidate. So I think that in the next week or two, she's got to assess where she is and whether or not it's worth taking this forward.
Let's go to Augusta, Georgia, and Sam. Sam, you're on the air.
Yeah. I think that the weekend was really flawed in a number of cases, and I think that the committee was hoodwinked by the Hillary Clinton campaign. One is because of the process. One is that Michigan did not have the other candidates on the ballot. And as was said in the Rules Committee, how can you actually use that as a criteria when one or two of the other candidates were not on the ballot? In Florida, again, the committee was hoodwinked. And I think that the Clinton campaign is, what they're doing is presenting an unreasonable picture in order for the committee to accept. Now, Barack Obama, on the other hand, and I do not support either candidate, Barack Obama, on the other hand, prevented a fair 50-50 percentage. And I think that really, for the American people, for the public, for the Democrats, and all the people to clearly understand that if the rules are broken, you really throw out what you have, and then you give each candidate 50-50. Why give Hillary Clinton a percentage when both candidates weren't on
Sam,
the ballot?
Sam, we've got the view. My time is short before the ballot. Jim Roosevelt, a quick answer there. And I need to ask you, you've been neutral all the way through. Are you now casting your lot one way or the other, Mr. Co-Chair?
No, because I also co-chair the Credentials Committee, I will remain neutral.
Mm-hmm.
The caller raises actually an important background point, which is that the Obama forces believed they had the votes for a 50-50 split of the delegates, but thought it would contribute to unity to go with the Michigan Party compromise, which won by a vote of 19-8. So there was significant Clinton support on the committee, Clinton supporters who went with it, and the Florida compromise got a unanimous vote on the committee.
James Roosevelt, co-chair of the DNC's Rules and Bylaw Committee, and still active on what may come. Thank you very much for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Democrats' big weekend showdown over Florida and Michigan and the Clinton-Obama endgame, whatever that may look like. We're joined by two members of the committee that met under the Klieg lights over the weekend in Washington, D.C. Ellen Kmark is with us. She's a committee member, superdelegate, backs Hillary Clinton. She joins us from Brewster, Massachusetts. From Columbia, South Carolina, we're joined by Carol Fowler, also a committee member and superdelegate, chairwoman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. She supports Barack Obama. Let's go to Stamford, Connecticut. And John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I watched most of the proceedings, and wow, that was great television. I was riveted. I couldn't move away from the television just for a second, even to eat breakfast. So I want to commend the members of the Rules and Bylaws Committee. Both sides were so passionate, and the leadership especially did a great job of holding it together. So I was really happy with the outcome, because the way the mainstream media spoke about it, I was expecting to see a civil war, and that's not what I saw at all. I saw a party that's extremely unified and was able to get behind a compromise. So the point I wanted to make now is that I see a lot less division in the Democratic Party than what the media portrays, and I understand that the media needs to seize upon a story, something dramatic, in order to make some points. But if I was reading between the lines, it seems to me that Senator Clinton's campaign is not serious about pursuing a civil war at all.
But, John, let me ask you. You say you see less division, but there's Senator Clinton in Puerto Rico saying she's the one. She's got the popular vote. She's more prepared to face John McCain, more prepared to handle the country and the world. That doesn't sound like over to you, Barack.
Well, compare that to the way the candidates spoke to and about each other in past campaigns, particularly in 1980, 84, even in 92. There was a lot greater degree of division, and the party was able to unify to a great degree in most of those times. I see a lot less of that now, and any tough word that I see now I interpret that as just bargaining. I think Senator Clinton is angling for either primetime slot on the convention or even the vice presidential slot, or just greater emphasis on her candidacy in general. But I don't see it as a civil war. I don't think she's going nuclear.
John, we've got it, and I'm sure she'll have some primetime real estate no matter what in Denver. Thanks very much. Let's go to another Connecticut call. Sumner in East Greenwich. Sumner, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I'm actually in Rhode Island.
Okay.
I wanted to make two points. As to what the committee did this weekend, I am outraged, both because they did not allow the full delegate votes, particularly from Florida, but also because they awarded the uncommitted votes to Obama in Michigan. However, Hillary still has a very good chance of winning, because at this point she can appeal the committee's decision. She can go before the Credentials Committee and, if necessary, go before the full number of delegates at the convention. And at that point, even the Obama supporters from Michigan and Florida are going to have to vote either to disenfranchise their fellow citizens or to vote to allow Hillary's delegates to vote the full strength of each delegation, at which point, obviously, the magic number increases in Hillary's number of delegates increases.
And if it,
like
if
say,
it, yes.
Oh, go on, sorry.
If it doesn't come down to Hillary in the end, where will you stand, Sumner?
I will be voting, unfortunately, by holding my nose and voting McCain, not because I like him, but because I'm outraged at the way people like me, who've been involved in civil rights and who have been involved in the Democratic Party for so many years, have been branded as racists in many cases. I think it was the Obama campaign which accused the Clinton campaign of racism and therefore injected racism when
Bill Clinton was talking about Jesse Jackson.
Right, exactly. That wasn't a racist remark. I believe that was a statement of fact. And there have been a number of issues like this where the Obama campaign has pointed the finger of racism at the Clintons and at their supporters instantly. And by doing so, they injected the racial issue into this, as far as I'm concerned.
So you're in the no-Bama camp, if it comes to that. Sumner, thanks for your call. Howard Dean, of course, talking over the battle over the weekend, saying that the party will come together. Sumner doesn't sound so sure. Let's listen to Dean.
We are strong enough to struggle and disagree and even be angry and disappointed and still come together at the end of the day and be united.
Carol Fowler, Obama supporter, committee member. You hear Sumner there. He's offended. And if it comes down to it, he's for McCain before Barack Obama.
Well, I think that's too bad that people feel that way. I think there probably were people on the other side who would react the same way. But, you know, we have to, I think, Obama will be a strong general election candidate. I think most Democrats are going to rally behind him. Most Democrats do not want another 4 years of Bush administration policies, which is what we would get with John McCain. So we, you know, Democrats all over the country are ready to move on, ready to get behind our nominee, whichever person that is. But more and more, we're seeing that it's going to be Senator Obama. We're ready to go. We're ready for the fall campaign. We're ready to beat John McCain.
Let's go to Kit in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Kit. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. I'm wondering why it is that it's so important to prevent this decision from going to the convention. Now that Hillary has a greater number of the popular vote, it seems quite appropriate that this be discussed at the convention. And I'm also pretty unhappy if, for the second time in a row, I'm not allowed to have my candidate either be nominated or win the presidency, even though they win more votes than the other person. This is 19 or 2000 all over again, only within this party.
Kit, in Ames, Iowa, where Barack's march began, Senator Obama's, let us take it to Elaine Kmark. Elaine, here's a fellow Clinton supporter who says, why not duke this out on the convention floor if necessary? Why not? Where do you stand?
Well, I think that that remains to be determined, because it does, after tomorrow, when the last of the voters will have voted, the process becomes a process of seeing where the approximately 4,000 delegates to the convention in Denver are and what they believe. You know, one of the interesting things, Tom, about this whole race is people got very interested in superdelegates, and they kind of missed the fact that when push comes to shove, all those delegates in Denver can do what they want to do. That once you get to Denver, there is no rule binding them to vote for the candidate they represented, except for, and this is the quote from the rule, in all good conscience. So,
but it means they can change horses as late as Denver.
Yeah, they can change horses. Any of them can, not just the superdelegates. So what Mrs. Clinton has to try to figure out is there enough passion behind her candidacy to continue to campaign for the nomination throughout the summer? There is some feeling in the party that when Ted Kennedy did that to Jimmy Carter in 1980, that it hastened Jimmy Carter's defeat. There's some feeling that taking a nomination fight past the primaries is detrimental to the front runner. I can't answer that yet because I don't know what the split really will be in the party. But I do know that this race, even though for people maybe for whom this is the first presidential race they've paid attention to, this race is frankly a lot less hostile and there's a lot less anger than there were between the partisans of Kennedy and Carter in 1980, or, to go to the other party, between the partisans of Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford in 1976. So everything is kind of relative, and I feel very confident that the party can come together.
Carol Fowler, how about it? Elaine says she expects something the next couple of weeks earlier, but there's the argument for keeping it open to the convention if there's enough passion out there. That's kind of a subjective thing to measure, but there was certainly a big voter turnout in Puerto Rico for Senator Clinton. As an Obama supporter, how do you feel about this thing possibly going to Denver and the convention?
Well, if it goes to Denver and to the convention, I believe that Senator Obama will still be the nominee. So, to my mind, it's better to get it wound down and let's begin going after Senator McCain rather than continue dragging it out and then have the same outcome. Adding 2 months to Senator Obama's time to campaign against Senator McCain is just very valuable, and I believe we need to get this over with in the next couple of weeks.
Does it hurt the Democrats' odds of winning in November if this fight goes all the way to Denver, Ms. Fowler?
We are going to win in November. It just will be harder if we have 2 months left, 2 months less time to do it in.
Let's take a call from Panama City, Florida, right at the center of the action. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, the point I'd like to make is that it wasn't the Florida Democratic Party that decided to hold the primary early. It was the Florida legislature, which is, in fact, controlled by the Republicans. So all the talk about what the Democratic Party did in terms of the primary is incorrect.
The Republicans moved the date there. The Democrats had to figure out how to deal with it. Are you satisfied with what they came down to on Saturday, Tom?
Yes, I am. I think it's probably the best decision we can make because the party needs to come together and move on toward November.
Got put in a tough spot there. Thanks for your call from Florida. Elaine Kimark, Carol Fowler, please stand by for a moment. We're joined now from Washington by Jake Tapper, senior national correspondent for ABC News. Jake, thanks very much for being with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this Saturday meeting? Do you think it's the best the Democrats could do under the circumstances? And what are you hearing now, Jake, about how long this may go on?
Well, I can't really judge. It's not my job. I mean, I would say it was a very difficult thing to do because the contests were not recognized. I would disagree with the caller who implied that the Florida Democratic Party really didn't have anything to do with this. The Florida Democratic Party were certainly willing participants in moving their primary. I talked to a number of them as this was happening, and they thought that they were calling Howard Dean's bluff, the chairman of the Democratic Party. They were calling his bluff, and they were trying to drive a stake through the heart of the supremacy of Iowa and New Hampshire in the early primary process. So the Florida Democrats knew what they were doing. It just turned out that Howard Dean wasn't bluffing. In terms of the solution, I think the Florida solution is, you know, as Bill Clinton told some donors in a private meeting in April, that's probably what you'd end up with, half-strength delegates. Michigan is a lot more problematic. Basically, the Michigan Democratic leaders invented a number based on exit polls and other mathematical constructs of giving Barack Obama 59 delegates, even though he wasn't on the ballot. And certainly I can understand why somebody would dispute that. In terms of when this fight ends, I don't know. It's very tough to read Senator Clinton right now. I think there's part of her that feels very aggrieved, very angry, feels that she wasn't treated fairly by the media, feels that she has won the popular vote, although there's certainly a lot of questions about the mathematical construct she uses to arrive at that figure. But at the same time, she is a loyal Democrat, and she is, generally speaking, practical. She has referred in the past to her having the responsibility gene. I don't see her being on the ticket, though, as some people have speculated.
Jake, we've got listeners right on this popular vote point. Let's go to Martin in Mashpee, Massachusetts. Martin, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make one point, and I'll go off the air. I just am really disturbed by the people who keep bringing up the issue of the popular vote that Hillary has won, when in fact that discounts almost all the caucus states, including Iowa, contrary to the recent caller. And in addition, she awards herself the popular vote in Michigan, in a state where she ran against nobody. And so that to claim that she's won the popular vote and that she's amassed this tremendous amount of votes as opposed to her opponent is just totally inaccurate and is just perpetuating a myth that's supporting this kick.
Martin, let us pick it up. Carol Fowler in South Carolina, you're in the Obama camp. What do you make of the now everyday Clinton camp claim that she's got the popular vote, she's won it?
Well, the Clinton camp knows, of course, that the popular vote doesn't have anything to do with who receives the nomination. That's not the way the system works. That's not how the process works.
But is it right on the face of it?
I'm sorry?
But is it right on the face of it? Because
that
there is...
she has won the popular
mm-hmm.
vote?
Yes.
I don't think so, because, as the caller said, all those caucus states do things on a much smaller scale. So you also don't get numbers of participants from a caucus state. You just don't know how many. Nothing is more important than the Iowa caucuses, but we don't know how many people participated in those and how many of those people were for Senator Clinton. You just don't calculate a nomination using the popular vote.
Elaine Kimark, are you comfortable with your candidate, Senator Clinton's camp, claiming that popular vote victory? Does it sit right with you?
Well, it does, even though, as Carol said, it's the popular vote that informs the delegate count. It's really the delegate count that matters for the nomination. But I think the reason the Clinton camp is invoking the popular vote is that it is a very good measure of really how strong she is. I mean, her, no matter which way you cut it, with four of the caucus states, without them, I mean, there's various ways to calculate. She is slightly ahead of Barack Obama in the actual number of votes. Now, that's a very powerful statistic. It's a very powerful arguing point, and I think it's being brought up now not to change the rules or anything like that. It's being brought up because this is how she's going to go to the remaining superdelegates, and she's going to argue that this shows that she is, in fact, the stronger general election candidate. And I think that is where she is and where her campaign is in arguing her strengths in the general election. Well, and this is one way to do it.
What a picture, and fighting over the numbers right down to the end. Elaine Kmark, Bylaws Committee member there on Saturday and with us today. Thanks so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you very much.
And Carol Fowler of South Carolina, also a committee member who was there on Saturday. Carol, thanks a lot for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Jake, any end to this story in sight this week, or are you now thinking it goes on weeks, I don't know, longer?
I think it goes on, and I have to say, I mean, this argument that Obama has lost the popular vote, it's not accurate unless you think that only 1,700 people in Iowa voted. That's the math that Clinton's using, and what they're doing is destructive because they are basically painting Obama as an illegitimate winner of the nomination, and the Clinton campaign really needs to think about this before they keep making this argument because it's not an honest argument.
Jake Tapper, ABC News, thanks very much for being with us. Great to have you, Jake.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.